That music you hear is titled Homage to Paradise Valley by Jeff Scott. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Jeff Scott is a composer and hornist who wrote the music for the world premiere of the production Fallen Petals of Nameless Flowers. It's performed by the American Wind Quintet, Imani Winds, and it is based on the lives of juvenile lifers, and it's going to be playing April 9th at the Seligman Performing Arts Center in Beverly Hills. The show, which is commissioned by Detroit Chamber Music, includes influences from Brian Jones, who's a community engagement manager for the organization, and a former juvenile lifer. He used stories of juvenile lifers to help develop this show. Fallen Petals of Nameless Flowers takes a meaningful story and illuminates it through art, telling the stories of four Michiganders who were sentenced to life without parole when they were juveniles. To talk more about telling true and often tragic stories through music, we have both Brian and Jeff here with us. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Jeff, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Sam. Thanks for having us.
So Jeff, for novices out there, let's talk first about what chamber music is, how it works, and what kind of instruments are involved in its production.
Well, chamber music, really, it's for small ensembles. One might be used to large orchestras with strings and percussion and all kinds of wind instruments with a conductor in front, and that's a real key element to it. Chamber music tends to be 12 musicians or less, and without a conductor most of the time, and that's the key difference.
And who came up with the idea of writing the music for this production based on the life of ex-juvenile lifers? And why is chamber music the right vehicle for telling that story?
Well, I think
go ahead, Brian.
If I can step in, a few things need to be clarified. The four Michiganders, they're now in their 40s and 50s, and yes, they were juveniles. But I was not actually a juvenile lifer. It was my participation going to hearings and everything that started the conversation at Chamber Music Detroit. And we thought that this would be a good vehicle, partially because we were looking at an audience who had been marginalized, and I wanted to present an audience or a group of people who were also being marginalized. But once we decided this was a route that we wanted to take and the National Endowment of the Arts approved the idea, we engaged with Robert Lehler, another Detroit native, to take these interviews with me and create the narrative, and these all four of them into a single poetic narrative. And then Jeff was brought, it was provided to Jeff, who did an awesome job of creating a new piece with seven instruments and the spoken word. And you've already shared that it's going to be on April 9th at Seligman Performing Arts Center. Mm-hmm. And, that was pretty much the genesis of the idea. But it's the conversations with Jeff and Robert and Steve, the president of Chamber Music Detroit, that really brought all of this together into we really need to pursue this.
Yeah. So, Brian, I need to apologize to you for referring in the open to you being a former juvenile lifer. That was information that our producers actually got somehow. But talk about how you collected stories from juvenile lifers for your production. And I guess what inspires you to be curious about that?
Well, one of the things that I have to admit is, yes, I was a lifer. I had a parolable life, and I knew these individuals personally, in prison and after prison, and I was so proud to see them out here succeeding. However, my goal isn't just to share that these 17, 16, 15-year-olds were able to come out here and be successful. My goal is to also share there are other people who are just like them who are still languishing in there. My interest is only in providing hope for people who would otherwise be experiencing hopelessness.
Jeff, let's talk just a little more about the music here and this chamber aspect of telling this story. Why is this, in your mind, the right way to do this?
Well, chamber music tends to move a lot quicker, a lot more progressively than large orchestral organizations. And there are a whole lot more of them in comparison to orchestras per state, let's say. There'll be dozens of chamber music societies, where there might be just a handful of orchestras. And so it's a great vehicle. It's also usually the chamber music societies tend to take more risks. They tend to have a lot more varied programming, and they'll feel their orchestra, their audience a lot more. They'll sort of understand their audience a lot more and know just how far they can pull them into certain social issues. And so I think chamber music has always been at the forefront of cultural issues.
I'm talking with two people who are involved with the production, which is coming up on April 9th, of Fallen Petals of Nameless Flowers. Is performed by the American Wind Quintet, Imani Winds. And the show is based on the lives of juvenile lifers. We want to hear from you during this conversation as well. What kind of art are you drawn to? What kind of stories do you think make compelling art? And what sort of music drives you around the idea of art? What kinds of pieces of art do you think capture amazing stories? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Let's go to Edward in Washtenaw County. Edward, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you, and good morning. This is a very unique time for you to take and be discussed in the concern of juvenile lifers. Mm-hmm. This month is a presidential proclamation of Second Chance. My name is Edward Sanders. I served more than 43 years in Michigan prison. Mm-hmm. I went to prison at the age of 17. I returned home just before my 60th birthday. Mm-hmm. I am now a graduate from the University of Michigan School of Social Work. I have formerly been employed here in Washtenaw County in their Conviction, Integrity, and Expungement Unit. I am also the former jailhouse attorney of Bryant Jones, who you are interviewing now.
You had a lot of connections to this show here, Edward.
Yes, and I thought it very important to take and churn in, as Bryant takes and point out, there are many others that are still languishing in our prisons that shouldn't be there. One of the points that the United States Supreme Court made in their rulings was that these children are innocent of the sentencing that they received. As states, we are placing too much emphasis on punishment mm-hmm. versus rehabilitation. As Bryant would take and point out to you, these young men and women that number in the hundreds that have been released back here in the state of Michigan are all doing great things. They're doing great things. They don't represent the typical person that come back home from prison. They tend to be very much involved in social activity, demanding social justice, trying to right-size our society to be more inclusive of people who have made mistakes in their past and that want to move on into the future. So this is a very important topic.
Yeah, Edward, I'm glad you called. Before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to talk a little more about your experience, the idea of spending so long in prison, having gone in when you were 17 and not coming out until you're almost 60. talk about how you put your life back together, or I guess in some cases just found your life since you never had that opportunity in the first place.
It's an excellent question. We kind of say that we are home, but you're not. You can take an attempt to try to get home after having been released for more than 10 or 20 years. It's a continuous struggle every day because there are so many barriers and layers of barriers that you have to take and try to overcome, to take it and succeed. I came out with a statute that took and said that I couldn't even have good time for the good behavior that I had performed while in prison. I had to go to court to acquire that. Had I not got that, I would have never got on a major college or university campus. Soon as that was removed, I was able to get in graduate school and get a master's degree in less time than you would have taken and held me on a parole. These things are very important. We need to allow people to take a return home in less time. We need to take and spend less time in punishing and more time on treatment. If we were to do that, we would be looking at thousands of other youth, formal youth, that should be allowed to come back into our society. The science that Bryant Stevenson and his legal team use in neuroscience, they used a cross-discipline in their law, and they borrowed from neuroscience that demonstrated that children are less culpable but more capable of reform. And when we say children, they introduce the evidence not only of young and middle adolescents, but even older adolescents. We talking about people up in their mid-20s. We can use the science and bring these men and women back home from our prisons. And instead, we are planning, the governor has just made an announcement to spend millions of dollars in multitudes of prisons throughout the state in what she's claiming to be technology. This is a gimmick to take and provide an economic stimulus, but it's short-sighted. There is no economic stimulus that excludes human capital. And we have human capital languishing in Michigan prisons. We need to bring them home and allow them to be productive members again in our society.
Edward, I'm really glad that you called and shared not only your thoughts, but your experience. So Brian, I want to give you a chance to react since you know Edward, it seems, and of course know lots of people like this who have the same stories.
Yes, I do know Mr. Sanders. We were very close, especially around 2000. That was a time when we were working hard to try and find a solution to my incarceration. However, that was almost 20 years ahead of when I actually walked out of there. So I had stopped doing that, but I had still engaged with the young people in there because they needed something that was going to give them a stimulus for their minds. I participated in programs and brought them in because I needed them to be better in our community, because that is a microcosm in there. That community in there becomes your community out here. When you care about someone in there, then you can learn to care about someone out here. And that is the reason why the juveniles actually brought me in after the decision in 2016 to get them prepared. One of the things we do not do is talk about how we ended up where we were.
Yeah.
So they had me come in and create a program or create a method of getting, of drawing out their narrative, getting their stories out. That's the same thing we did with Robert Laidler to get the story out. There, the people who were chosen for this were chosen because of their diverse backgrounds. You had a star athlete. You had a person who was uneducated. For when you walk into a courtroom and you're uneducated, how can you help your defense help you?
Right. Right.
We also have a person who, when a person has been doing something for you and then they ask you to do something for them, you just do it because you almost feel obligated because they've been helping you for so long. I wanted to show that no matter the influence that a child undergoes, they can still overcome the decision that leads them down that dark path.
Yeah, right. Okay, Brian and Jeff, it was really great to have both of you here talking about this wonderful work of art. And a reminder to listeners, Fallen Petals of Nameless Flowers will play April 9th at the Seligman Performing Arts Center in Beverly Hills. Brian and Jeff, thanks so much for being here on Detroit Today. Yeah,
go ahead. Say also, if anyone needs more information or tickets, you can also go to cmdetroit.org or 313 or call 313-335-3300 for our ticket offices.
Yes.
We will be glad to have you in our audience. We expect this to be very moving experience.
Yes, it absolutely will. And we will have all that information on our WDET.org website as well.
Stephen, I would like you to be there.
You know, I will not be in town on April 9th. I'm sorry. I'm in Missouri a lot these days, tending to a family medical issue. So, but I will be thinking great thoughts during the performance.
Online.
And wishing you well. Yeah.
Well, thanks for having us.
That's right. I could watch it online. That's right. I could watch it online. All right. Okay. That's going to do it for us this week. Come back Monday when we're going to be talking about the history of lynching in America and the new anti-lynching law that was finally passed after more than a century of failed attempts. What do we expect to see be different in America because of its passage? This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again on Monday.